We have at least two.
Actually, I guess I found two. Three.
Right. Has anybody not paid for the ticket yet? I think you all came through. Okay, so Barry can take care of you. Okay. So make sure you get your chocolate on, get your bubbly on. And wow, people with actual books. This is great. So this is going to be highly interactive. So we're going to do a bunch of exercises, and they're going to be moving around. And I decided that I'm going to name this from now on, Love is in Your Body, because it's all about how you embody love and how you actually feel it inside your body. And then it's real. I mean, I can talk about concepts and ideas until you're blue in the face, and you walk out here, you know, like, what happened? This didn't quite work. But when it's in your body and that's your guide, then it works. Hi, welcome. Come on down. We have seats. We have more seats if you need them. We may have, maybe just expand the semicircle a little bit, just like open up a little space and, can you hear us, people on the conference call line? Hello? You hear me? Okay, good. All right, fantastic. Okay, good. All right, is everybody happy? Are you provided? Something to drink, something to munch on, smiles all around. It's a little bit of a dirty trick to give people chocolate at your talk that's about feeling good, because you eat the chocolate, you get all these hormones and stuff running in your body, you already feel good. So, however, we're going to use every tool at our disposal to do exactly that, make you feel fantastic tonight. So, how y'all doing? Good?
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you for coming. I'm Dr. Ali Benazir. I'm the author of this book that some of you seem to already have, called The Tao of Dating, The Smart Woman's Guide to Being Absolutely Irresistible. And normally when I do these talks, it's basically a recap of the book, but you've already read the book, so why not add something? There's been a lot of research done in recent years that's been very interesting and has also affected my life, and I want to convey that to you. And also, a lot of this stuff I haven't really tested in public. I've done it, you know, with individuals before. So I really appreciate your coming here and helping me with this stuff, because it's all new to me as well to a certain extent. So we're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be highly interactive. And also want to give you guys the opportunity to meet one another. I mean, here's a circle of potential friends here. And you're going to be doing exercises. And it's very likely the person sitting next to you is going to become a very good friend as a result of these exercises. So let's go around once and get all your names. I'm Ali. Hello, Alexa.
Hi, Alexa.
Hey.
I'm Angela.
Hello, Angela.
Hi, Angela.
Hi, I'm Victoria.
Hello, Victoria.
Hi, Victoria.
I'm Loni.
Hi, Loni.
I'm Elaine.
Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Lisa.
I'm Christy.
Hi, Christy.
I'm Laura.
Hi, Laura.
Welcome, everybody. All right, so tonight is going to be an interesting mix of stuff. We're going to use techniques from various domains, and what they all have in common is stuff that I'm interested in, and stuff that I've also found very effective. So I hope from this repertoire of tools, you guys can find, you ladies and guy, can find elements that you can apply to your own life. One of the tenets that the Buddha taught his disciples was ehi pasiko, which means go see for yourself. Go figure it out on your own, right? So if you were to take everything that I say as, oh, this is the truth, I'm just going to do this, then you will have missed the point of the teaching, which is to actually see how this feels in your neurology, see how it applies to your life, and see how this particular tool fits in with your pre-existing habits, tendencies, and behaviors. So, and you know, if you can take even one thing that you apply on a regular basis from tonight, it has a chance of transforming all of your life. So that's the way I want you to think about it. I'm going to throw a lot of stuff at you, and we're going to do a lot of exercise, and I hope you guys have time to repeat them later on your own. Okay, so, and I'm here to serve you. So this is not about me, it's about you, and you've made the effort to come here, and I thank you for that. So if you have questions, I'm here to answer those. We'll have a whole half-hour Q&A session at the end, but even as we're going on, just raise your hand. I'll try to get to you to clarify things if it's not entirely clear to you. Cool?
Yes.
All right, good deal. So recording is going. All right, fantastic. So I'm going to start with a little story. This is a funny story. It's an unlikely story. It's kind of crazy. So I fell in love the very first time when I was 7. So as much as a 7-year-old can fall in love, you know. So here's this girl. Her name was Layla. She was super cute. She had this little dimple. She had a little mole right there. I always remember. And she was pretty much the cutest thing ever. And she was in my third grade class. And this thing's talking back with me. Okay, good. And she was in my second grade class. And what does a 7-year-old know? Nothing, really, except that I want to be around this girl. So I'd like carry her lunch for her and say, hey, you want to play sometimes? And of course, I was very shy, and so was she. So finally, the great occasion comes for me to hang out with her and ask her out, sort of, right? It was my birthday. And for a 7-year-old, his 8th birthday is pretty much the climax of his life. Okay, so this is the absolute pinnacle, right? And it's a big deal. So, you know, I go to Layla and I say, Layla, I'm having my birthday next week. Do you want to come? And she said, no, and walked away. And, you know, and there I am, crushed in a heap of 7-year-old flesh and bone. So, at this time, actually, interesting things happened. I lived in Iran, and there was a revolution, and subsequently she was separated. All the boys and the girls were segregated in classes. And then she was actually taken to another whole school because fundamentalism started to descend on the country. And basically, I never saw her again. And I always wondered what happened to Layla Clark. And you know, every once in a while, I just go online and you know, just look her up, and maybe she turns up. You never know. And of course, you know, the internet comes on, and then Google comes on, and then you can actually search for people. But nothing came up until one day in 2008. Facebook. There is Facebook. And I was one of the early adopters of Facebook. And I get this message. The message is from this lady around 30-something, around my age. And the picture has a little mole right there. And it says, are you Allie from second grade? I'm like, oh my God. It's her. She's alive and well. She lives in New York City. She's a psychiatrist. She's, you know, doing great. Married. But I'm like, hey, I'm going to be in New York in a month. Why don't we get together and have some coffee? So we do, and we sit down, we catch up. She's doing very well. And, you know, even though we separated many moons ago, our divergent paths kind of converged. I went to medical school, was a psychiatrist, doing stuff with the mind, and there she is, an actual practicing psychiatrist. And of course, I had to ask her, hey, look, you remember that time when I asked you to come? This is a really silly question, but do you remember when I asked you to come to my birthday party? And she's like, yeah, I think I do. I think that was like the last time we really talked to each other. And, you know, I really wanted to come, but I just didn't know what to say. I mean, I was 7 years old, and my mom probably didn't approve or something. I don't even remember why, but I just remember that I wanted to come, but I just couldn't. I'm like, oh, well, that kind of sucks, you know? So here was a chance to add the total storehouses of love and connection in the world, and it just didn't happen. Why? Because both parties felt disempowered, right? Because there she was, and she had, in my mind, all the power in the world, and yet she didn't exercise it, right? But there she was thinking she has no power, which is why she didn't exercise it. Okay, so what am I, why am I bringing up this story besides the fact that it's kind of cute and fun to tell? Hi, welcome. We'll get you some chairs. And the idea is that you are all like Layla Clark right now, right? You have power. You have real power. You have the power to elevate a man or woman, anybody in your surroundings, right? With a look, with a smile, with a gesture, with a phrase of praise, you are able to. You are capable of doing this. Because what I often hear, I've been on the receiving end of thousands of letters from you over the years, from all over the world, is that, you know, how do I make him like me? Or what should I do? Or why don't these men give me more attention? Or why don't they love me first? And the idea is that you have the power to make everybody around you light up. And the more you exercise that power, the more power you have. And on top of that, because of the amazing and wonderful gift that the universe has given us, every time you make somebody else feel great, you feel great. And the more you feel great, the more you're going to glow. And the more you glow, the more people are going to come around and say, who are you glowing thing? I want to be around you. What's going on here, right? And they feel great, so the whole thing perpetuates. So we're going to talk about that, and I'm very gratified that this book recently came out over here. Love 2.0 came out last week. Love it. It's amazing. Hi, welcome. And love, how our supreme emotion affects everything we feel, think, do, and become. And it really validates a lot of these things I've been thinking all along with real science, and also validates a lot of principles from tantric Buddhism, stuff that's been around for thousands of years. Okay? So let's make a row behind them, because I don't think we can expand the semicircle any further. So the second row. Barry, can you help Kyle? That'd be great. Just put one front row back. I can still. If you're in the second row, you still can't escape from me.
Well, we got here early. Oh. Yeah,
that's
your postcard.
Oh, thank you. There was another event here, so your list could start with 7:15. Thank you for making it. Okay, fantastic. All right. Now, another way I want you to think about this is through a few years ago in Los Angeles, I heard a story from Mark Victor Hansen. And you guys know Mark Victor Hansen? He wrote, he started this whole series called Chicken Soup for the Soul, right? And no more flashes from Alan, please. Thank you. Anyway, so he was telling a story about how he went hiking one day. He went hiking to Mount Baldy, and you know they're all prepared, and so they went hiking, they're coming down. But on the way down, they saw this guy. He wasn't doing very well. It was obvious he was kind of teetering. He wasn't wearing nearly enough. The temperature was falling, and he didn't have any water. He was dehydrated. So they basically hydrated him. They gave him some clothes. They carried him down. And basically, as a result, you know, a lot of bad stuff was avoided, right? So it could have been a really bad situation. And so what the guy said was that you were my answered prayer. Mark Victor Hansen and his friends were his answered prayer. So the way I want you to think about this, your whole love life, your dating life, is who is the answered prayer can you be today? This is a very different question from where's my love now? What have you done for me lately? Okay? And it's also much more empowering because it's something that you can do. Does that make sense?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
All right, excellent. So. Pardon me?
Ask that question again.
The question is, whose answered prayer can I be today? Okay? And actually, you should always start with you. Be your own answered prayer, too. And we're going to do an exercise that does exactly that. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about this here book, because it's really powerful. I highly recommend that you get a copy for yourself. I have both the electronic copy and the hard copy, because you never know, we need some Love 2.0. So I'm going to share some of the concepts in there. So she redefines love in a very scientific way as something that happens in your body. And she also wants to disabuse us of the notion that love is something that is exclusive, that is something lasting and something unconditional. And she says that love is something that arises in under certain conditions. You have to feel safe. There has to be an actual connection with another person. So this whole idea of long distance relationship over the phone, this stuff does not work because it's all about a physiological connection. And also it's possible to experience her definition of love, this thing that she calls love, this bodily love, with strangers. It's a moment by moment thing. So, and if you have a long-term relationship with someone, the way you extend that love is you cultivate those moments on an ongoing basis. Okay, so this is great news, right? Because this means that you can have love all the time if you decide to put in the effort, right? So, and some of the benefits of this. Positive emotions expand your outlook, and from that you get a broadened mindset, which makes you more flexible, attuned to others, creative and wise, and ultimately healthier and more resilient. So this affects everything in your life. I mean, it's about your overall health, well-being, longevity, everything, okay? So what's not to love about love? Now, it has three components, right? And the three components are sharing one or more positive emotions between you and another person. So positive emotions. She called this positivity resonance. You feel something positive, another person feels something positive, and you both kind of light up. And there's a whole body of science behind this about mirror neurons. So mirror neurons are these neurons that are discovered in monkeys when they had electrodes in the monkeys, in the monkeys' brains, and these neurons started spontaneously firing when the monkey saw somebody else eating ice cream. You're like, what? What's that all about? Turns out that was the monkey imagining itself eating ice cream and experiencing pleasure thereby. And so you have this. You see somebody else getting a massage, you're like, oh, that feels kind of nice, right? You see two people in a movie making out, you're like, ooh, that's interesting. So mirror neurons are happening all the time. And an amazing miracle that these mirror neurons do is that when you are in tune with another person, right? When you are talking to another person and you're in rapport, right? It syncs up your blood pressure, it syncs up your heart rate, your breathing rate, your whole physiology changes. And that is when you allow your mirror neurons to sync up, okay? Okay, so that's the synchrony of biochemistry and behavior. And finally, the third component is a reflective motive to invest in each other's well-being that brings mutual care. A handful, but the idea is that you're actually exercising compassion. It's like, I actually care about you, okay? So those are the three components. I'll say it again. Sharing a positive emotion, synchrony of biochemistry and physiology, and the motive to invest in care. Okay, so right now we're going to do our first exercise. Okay, it's going to be fun. So what I want you to do is to find a partner. Somebody right next to you is good. Stranger is better. just because if you're already friends, it's too easy. Okay, so I want you to feel the before and after. Okay, and. And make a note of how you feel right now on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of feeling the togetherness, feeling, you know, the connection, okay? Okay, you got a partner? Okay, good. Now, I want you to do is to face each other. Turn your chairs and face each other. Okay. You are each going to take 2 minutes. Okay, not yet. Please, instructions. Okay, so... You're each going to take 2 minutes, and you're going to recount a story. You're going to recount a story from your childhood, okay? Share a story from your childhood, preferably a fun and interesting one, okay? And what the person who is listening is going to do is you're going to completely mimic the other person's body language, okay? So, going like this. Okay. Right. I don't have to go crazy, but just, you know, the overall, like, posture, how far the torso is bending, hands, everything, okay? So, this is called mirroring, okay? So, 2 to 3 minutes, and then we're good. So, so one of you, whoever whoever. Okay, so one person A, one person B. A's, put your hands up. All the A's, put your hands up. Okay, A's are telling a story from childhood, and B's are following body language exactly. And one more thing. You're gonna look directly in their eyes. Okay. So before we start, just pick, on a scale of 1 to 10, assess how connected you feel with this person right now, a total stranger, right? How connected do you feel, 1 to 10? 10 is like, oh my God, soulmate. or BFF, or whatever you want to call it. And 1 is like, total stranger, okay? And begin, go. Stop wherever you are and switch. Now B's are the storyteller and A is the follower. Ready, set, go. Thank you. eye contact. Look in the eyes. Good, good. In the eyes. 30 more seconds. Well done. All right, turn back this way. All right, can I have your attention, please? Thank you. I mean, I know the stories are tons of fun. That was the whole point of the exercise. Okay, so let's get some before and after. So before the exercise, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being hot and tropical, 1 being Arctic freezing, how connected did you feel to the person that was your partner? Let's start here. Just give me a number. What is that?
She looked at me and she mirrored me. So
no, before you started. Before, we're asking before. Just throw the number out.
Before is just like a stranger.
One number, that's all I need.
Okay.
1 to 10.
About 3.
3, perfect.
4.
4.
7.
3.
3.
7.
Before 8? Oh, you're friends. Okay. It better be 8. Okay, good.
8.
5.
3.
2.
7. I think 4.
Good, good.
2.
Okay.
4.
Remember, these are strangers. It's okay.
2.
3. Okay, good. Yeah, friends. So that's going to be fine. Okay. Outliers. Okay, good.
Yeah.
And now, what about after? And what was the after?
After 2.
All right, so they started higher, went lower. How about
9.
9.
Six.
Okay.
Yeah, 7.
7, okay.
Six, 7.
Okay.
Seven,
okay.
9.
10, amazing.
8.
8. Okay.
10.
10.
Go.
8.
Mm-hmm.
9.
Mm-hmm.
7.
Mm-hmm.
6.
6.
8.
Okay.
8.
8.
8.
Okay.
9.
6.
7.
7.
Fantastic. Okay, so we went from an average of around 3.5 to 4, right? To maybe 5, maybe, to around 7.5. So that's pretty good. So give yourself a hand. So what happened here? Hi, Annika. Welcome. So what happened here was that you experienced the synchrony, the positivity resonance. Okay, so you shared a story from childhood. This is fun. This is exciting. This is like something deep about who you are. And the other person was paying attention, was looking directly into your eyes, which is a big part of this physical connection, right? And was mirroring, consciously mirroring your body posture. Fantastic. So, and you felt it. You really felt it, right? I mean, the number went significantly up for almost all of you. And guess what? You can do this all the time. Why? Because it feels good and it's free. So, and it does not fatten you like chocolate. So you can do this all the time. And does it work in the context of a date? You think?
Yeah.
Might work? Okay.
But not consciously.
Huh?
You wouldn't want to do that.
Why not?
It's
yeah, but only because I told you. The thing is,
yeah.
Here's the exercise I want you to do. See, you guys think that, oh, this is overblown, I can't do this. But if you go into the cafe right now, some cafe in San Francisco, right, and watch two friends talking, like deep in conversation, one of them's going to be like this, and the other one's going to be like this. It's really uncanny. I mean, I did this exercise with Kyle the other day, and I said, watch. And it's true. We stopped, we did a little pause, and right in the middle of that, he saw that we both had the same posture. In fact, when I have like a 3-day seminar, the exercises I do is I have people tell the story, right? That you start the story. I don't give any further instructions, and then halfway through it, I say freeze, don't move, and then I have people look at the pears, and the pears, well, they're like peas in a pod. They're like, So that's what happens. So what I want you to realize is that you may think this is contrived, but look, the whole dating thing is contrived, right? And this actually makes you feel better. Giving somebody a compliment is contrived. I mean, you know, you're doing something, right? But that's why we're here, because doing something gives you power, and this is your power. So what I invite you to do is to open your mind to the possibility of how these practices can change whatever it is that you're doing right now, and your feeling and your results. Because, you know, to be honest, whatever you've been doing up to now has given you the results you've had up to now. So if you want better results, you want to do something else, right? Hi, welcome Luffy. All right, good. Fantastic. So, how you guys feeling? Pretty good?
Yeah.
Awesome. Do you want more? More?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, do you want more?
Yes!
Thank you, that's good. Okay, good. Okay, so that was good. That gets you ready for something even more powerful. So, there's a practice in Buddhism called loving kindness meditation, or metta. How many people here have a meditation practice of sorts? This is fantastic. And how many of you have heard of metta before? That's awesome. Okay, great. So I'd heard of metta for a very long time, and you know, had gotten bits and pieces of how this works. And this book has a very clear description of what it is and how to do it, and probably one of the best I've ever experienced. And the reason is that she's a scientist, and she wants to make it very clear and easy for you to use this practice. So I thought we would do this exercise together. So the idea is that the more you activate the heart muscle, kind of the feeling muscle, the better you get at it. And the better you get at it, the more you can connect with people. And the more you connect with people, the better you feel, the healthier you become, the more your vision expands, the wiser you become, and just the whole thing gets better. Okay? And the idea is that you make this a daily practice. This is like exercise, right? If I let's say I'm your personal trainer for love, right? I take you to the gym, I say, do this, do that, and you're like, oh, this feels good. And afterwards, like, oh, I feel sore, this is great. And then I leave, right? And you're like, I didn't become fit after one session. What's up with that, right? Well, that's not the way things work, right? You become fit by practicing. You become fit by continually doing something, making a part of who you are. So I'm going to introduce you to this today, and you will feel for yourself what it's like. And if you like it, then you have the option to continue. And I would strongly encourage you to incorporate some kind of meditative practice in whatever you do, because that meditative practice becomes the cornerstone of transformation, of really changing your behavior, your physiology, your brain chemistry, everything. It all starts with that, okay? So, would you like to try the loving kindness meditation?
Sure.
Yes, all right, good. So, make yourself nice and comfortable, and sit up as straight as possible, okay? As straight as possible. And feel the ball of your feet on the ground, and your full feet on the ground. Good? Okay, good. And I invite you now to make sure all of your phones are off. So if you haven't turned them off, please make sure you have. Airplane mode is probably best right now, because even if it buzzes, it'll probably take you out of full attention. Okay? Okay. So I'm just going to read most of this. If you're in a chair, scoot back in your seat so the lowest part of your spine is well supported, and straighten your spine up toward the sky. Lean forward from the back of the chair just a bit. Relax your shoulders, pull them back slightly. This position allows you to expand your ribcage in all directions when you breathe, creating more spaciousness around your heart. Place your feet flat on the floor so that the heels and balls of your feet make equal connection with the ground. Rest your palms gently on your thighs. If sitting like this doesn't appeal to you, Find any other position that makes you feel both alert and relaxed and that allows your chest to expand. That part is very important. You're allowing your heart space to actually expand. Once you are physically comfortable, let your eyes drift closed. Or if you find that awkward, set your gaze lightly on a spot on the floor in front of you or on a simple, peaceful object. Bring your awareness to the sensations of your own heart. Breathe to and from your heart. Notice how each breath brings new energy to your heart and allows your heart to send life-giving oxygen coursing throughout your body. Rest in the awareness for several breaths. Now, in this quiet moment, visualize someone for whom you already feel warm, tender, and compassionate feelings. This could be a child, could be your spouse, could be a pet, someone whom the mere thought of makes you smile. Let his or her smiling face surface in your mind's eye. As you take in that image, with the lightest mental touch, briefly call to mind this loved one's good qualities. Your goal is to arouse warm and tender feelings naturally by visualizing how connecting with this loved one makes you feel. So really feel that connection, the actual bond. And once these tender feelings have taken root, creating genuine warmth and kindness inside you, gently repeat these traditional phrases of loving kindness meditation silently to yourself. And if you want to modify them to suit you, that's fine too. And they go something like this. May this person feel safe. May this one feel happy. May this one feel healthy. May this one live with ease. My version is, may you be safe, may you be happy, may you be healthy. The words themselves are not as critical as the actual sentiments and emotions that they evoke. So if you want to rephrase them in any way that actually moves you the most, you're welcome to do that. And reflect on these phrases slowly at your heart's pace, one phrase per breath. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be healthy. And visualize what the fulfillment of each wish would look like, especially on the person for whom you're wishing the kindness. What energy would be created? And in the space between breaths, pause just a moment to feel your heart and body and really notice how you feel right now. Discover what sensations arise in you. And as you repeat the phrases for this loved one in particular, you might even imagine seeing your good wishes moving from your heart region to his or hers, perhaps as a wave, a beam of light, or a slowly unfurling golden ribbon. So continue to slowly and steadily repeat these phrases for this particular loved one for a few minutes and gradually let go of this image and simply hold warm and tender feelings in your heart region. Now, I invite you to find another person that you know well. Visualize this person's face and gently and briefly call to mind his or her good qualities. And again, with this person in mind, slowly repeat those loving kindness phrases. May you feel safe. May you feel happy. May you feel healthy. May you live with ease. Visualize how this person would appear if each of these wishes were to come true for him or her. And pause just a moment between each phrase to notice how your body responds. Take a few deep breaths. One phrase per breath, and as you continue to practice, gradually call to mind all of your friends and family as a group, and really visualize that whole group, maybe like a big family and friend gathering. Wish them all well for your body's appreciation of the classic loving kindness phrases. May you feel safe. May you feel happy. May you feel healthy. May you live with ease. And perhaps it will enhance the experience of really feeling what they feel if you were to put your hand, your right hand, on your own heart as if you're putting it on the heart of all these people, right? As if you're transmitting the energy of loving kindness into their bodies. by using your own heart as a proxy. May you feel safe. May you feel happy. May you feel healthy. May you live with ease. So go ahead and put your hand on your heart if you haven't done it yet. And just really feel that. And see how this whole group of friends looks as if they were feeling these wishes come true for them. Okay? And finally, there's one more person we want to do this with. I want you to imagine and very vividly see a picture of yourself. I want you to extend all of these good feelings, all these good wishes now to you. May I feel safe for you, whichever phrase works better for you. May you feel happy. May you feel healthy. One breath per. And perhaps you may notice how you had a very easy time extending this to your loved ones, those people whom you've known for so long, and you deem worthy of your loving and kindness. And you may notice that there was a slight gap, a slight discrepancy between how you felt for them and how you feel towards yourself. And notice how maybe all this time you have been perhaps too quick to criticize yourself and come down harshly on yourself, maybe even thinking that some sort of virtue. And in this moment, just allow that hand that is on your heart to be really on your heart and say, may I feel safe? May I feel happy? May I feel at ease? May I be healthy? And any transgressions that may have occurred before in the same way that you would forgive upon your nephew or your niece or your kid or your pet or something, extend that same loving kindness to you. And when you really feel that coursing through your body, and when you feel a smile coming on, feel free to open your eyes and come back to the present time and place and do a little small bow of your head to yourself and to all of your loved ones. And feel free to take more time if you need. Welcome back to the room. How are you feeling? Good, okay, good. For whom was this a new experience, something you hadn't felt before? Yes. Anybody else? The first time please don't be shy. This is why we're here, to share this and to realize that we have been too harsh on ourselves for far too long, right? And this whole idea of, I can love my little niece because she's cute and innocent, but how about me? Oh, I've done all these bad things, terrible things. I slip, I fall, and I deserve my own vilification and not as much sympathy as, say, a little child is. But it starts with you. It starts with the self-love and also this whole meta practice. So you can do that just extending it to friends and family. You can add, I like to tack on a little bit at the end because that adds a self-love component, which is so powerful and such an essential part of relating with anyone. It all starts with you. You're generally as harsh as you are with other people as you are on yourself. You're in general as loving as you are to other people as you are to yourself. So start with you. Okay, questions about this part, or does anybody want to share? Yes, tell me your name.
My name is Olivia.
Olivia, yes.
I am Buddhist.
Fantastic.
So that kind of practice we do every day.
Every day?
For the universe and all the animals.
And how does that mean? And how does that make you feel, Olivia, when you do it?
It's about 15 minutes, say, share that everybody can be really
well. Fantastic. And does it make you feel better or worse after you do it?
As for me, I'm focused, so I think that's kind of one of the practices. So.
Just work with me and say better. Better? Okay! just humor me. All right, good. All right, yes, tell me. But the thing is that sets the upper limit, right? So the less hard you are on you, the less hard you will be on the rest of the world. Questions, insights, share. This is a workshop about feelings, so it's okay to share.
For me, it tapped into pretty quickly, actually, deep emotion of pent up love that I haven't shared. So when I had those people in my mind, I wondered going through the clip
fantastic. If I can get tears in a workshop, yes, I win.
Yeah, but it doesn't really work on a date, so.
Yeah. Well, the idea is this is the workout. So, you know, you do this beforehand, and then when you actually come face to face, you're ready. Now, if you're feeling this much, if you're getting this much out of it on one try, just imagine what will happen if you do this on a daily basis, every day. And the experiments have been done. They talk about scientists, and they take two groups of people. One group of people does this for like a week or two. The other does not. And the differences are dramatic, even after just 2 weeks of doing this on a daily basis. So I encourage you to incorporate this, you know, 15 minutes a day, 10 minutes a day, whatever. Just start with whatever you can actually incorporate into your life, and then extend it and make it a regular part of what you do. Great. All right. So many of you came in after we'd started, and it is possible that you did not get Prosecco or chocolate. So I encourage you to now go for it and get some while we gear up for the next part. So does anybody want chocolate or Prosecco? Yes? No? Maybe? Actually, what we can do is maybe pass the plate. Pass the plate around. That might be the least disruptive way of doing it.
Pass the bottle.
Pass the bottle. Pound it down. It's all good. We're all friends here. And alcohol is self-sterilizing, right? I mean, alcohol kills bugs. So, yes, question.
Hey, you know what? I just want to comment about exercise.
Yeah?
I've read so many books, I've seen so many people that have, like, went to a guide for math, and they say what they learned is
yeah.
So that is, like,
right, and this is the muscle you are working, yeah, this is the muscle you're exercising. And it really does work that way. You just keep doing it. Keep doing it until you get better at it. And then it becomes who you are. It's not something that you turn on. And the whole, I have a little confession to make to you guys. So the Tao of dating, right? So if you read the book, you kind of figured out it's really not about dating at all. In fact, I kind of don't want you to date at all. Dating is a terrible, contrived, awful thing. It's like an evening-long job interview where you have to pay for it, which sucks, right? So nobody wants that, and it's not even you. So the whole idea is that if you do these practices, then on a daily basis, everywhere you go, you are connecting with people. You're looking them directly in the eye. You're having that micro moment of smiley, love, synchrony. And then from that, good things will emanate, and you feel better anyway. So it's like, you know, you already have the thing, which is to feel good. Okay, good. So let's see. Yes, question.
I haven't actually read the book.
We will have the book too. We'll talk about it. Okay, how many people in the room have already read the book? Hands up! Holy smokes, pretty good. Okay, we have at least half, 50%. And for the other 50%, we have books in the back. So,
oh, shoot. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Oh, no. Woohoo! There will be no alcohol abuse in this room. All right, good. I'm sure you've destroyed the concrete floor now, but it's okay.
It was really
Okay, great. So, yes.
What if you dislike feelings?
You dislike feelings?
I don't like part of them. I hate it.
That's my job. I'm the guy here. So
you dislike feelings?
No, I'm the guy. Guys are supposed to say something like that. So.
Yeah. So what about the guy?
Well, you know, we could work with that.
Okay.
We will work with that until you feel comfortable. Because when you do it and you do feel it, it feels really good, you know?
Yeah.
It's the initial part. It's like.
It's a little complicated now.
You know, it's like, you know, you want to jump in the pool, and it's like, oh my God, it's cold, or you want to hop in the ocean. It's like, oh, this is terrible. But then once you get in, it's like, oh, this is the best idea ever.
Water.
We can more Prosecco here. And chocolate, double dose. Okay, good. No, it's all right.
Sorry.
I like the challenging one, yes. Okay, is there a question, Olivia?
Yeah.
Yeah, question. Gives you a headache?
Yeah.
One at a time. Do them one at a time. Okay, good. Now, it's important that you all have some chocolate in your hand because we're going to involve that in the next exercise. A little bit. Something. Something you can munch on. Okay, so go forth and acquire. So it was not entirely just a little breather break. It was part of, it's all part of the show.
Thank you.
I know, it's terrible. Okay, so. I want to talk a little bit about design. Okay, so I mentioned that the three most popular questions that I get from the ladies about guys is one, how do I get him? Two, what's he thinking? And three, how do I get him back? So the problem.
Same three questions you get from the guys.
No, their question is how do I get her in bed? And that's also question two and three. Anyway.
She wrote
this
for the guys first, right?
I wrote the one for the guys first, yes. I actually don't remember what the most popular question for guys is. But the problem with these three questions is that they're the wrong questions, okay? So let's talk about desire. So over the summer, I went to Amsterdam and hung out there. Great city, loved it. And read a bunch of books on Tantra Buddhism. And just to clear things up, it's like 2% kinky sex and 98% really other cool stuff. So we're not going to talk about the kinky sex tonight. That's some other stuff, okay? But Tantra is really this way of engaging with the world fully and kind of being in love with the world. And there are parallels with this whole idea of positivity resonance. So I'm going to explain that to you. So, and the books that I read were by this fellow Daniel Audier, French guy, went off in the 70s, went, got deep, you know, he went into Tibet in this unheated monastic stupa, you know, in the sky, you know, meditated there for years, and then went off to Kashmir, found this lady who was a Tantra teacher, and, you know, went through crazy things in order to be accepted as her student. Anyway, the genuine article. He actually did it, and he wrote some great books. So he talks about desire. And he says, look, we got a problem here, okay? Because when you want something, you can't win. When you have desire for something, there are two settings. One is you don't get it. Now you're in a pissy mood. Now you're disappointed because you didn't get it, right? Like, I really wanted that. So that's a problem, right? Second setting is you actually get it. And you think, whee, I got it. But did you really? Because what you wanted was your projection of that thing. You had certain ideas about what that was going to be. You never actually saw that thing for what it really was, right? And so you get it. And now there's like this clash between what you thought you wanted and this thing that you got. You're like, what the hell is this? And that means what? A 50% divorce rate in this country. That's what happens. Okay? It's like, oh my God, we got married and suddenly it's a totally different person. So the point is, what you need to do is you need to stop these projections and actually see things for what they are. So how do you do that? And what do you do with this desire? Because it's a lot of energy. You feel it in your body. It's like, ooh, want, need. Okay, so as you have a piece of chocolate on your lap that you're not eating because I told you not to, it's like, ah, want. Now what do I do? Okay, this is what you do. What you do is you take that little D desire and turn it into big D desire, right? What you do is you allow your desire for that piece of chocolate. Who has a piece of chocolate on their knee that they actually really want to eat? Yes? Are you feeling desire for that? Who's feeling desire? Chocolate. A little bit. Just a little bit.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fantastic. Okay, good. So, or anything else, I want you to find something in the world that you really want. Maserati, Manolo Blahnik, whatever it is, right? So, feel that desire. Close your eyes and feel that desire, okay? Okay. Now realize if you were to just let this arc, this little lightning bolt of desires, end with that thing, well, it just ends with that thing, and then you get it, and then, you know, you experience some kind of disappointment or sort of momentary pleasure, and that's that. But what if you were to let that arc of desires move through that object, right? Permeate the space around it into everything else, like the whole department store instead of just the Manolo Blahnik, right? And then the city around it, everybody there, everything, right? And feel that desire as what it really is, which is the motivating force of life, what animates the entire universe. That is what desire is. You can think of desire and attraction as kind of like gravity. That is the thing that really animates the entire universe. So So the idea is that as you feel that, that expands your heart, right? And that includes everything in the room, right? As opposed to that one guy you really wanted. And that empowers you instead of diminishing your power. And then you actually have a chance to see that thing for what it really is, okay? As opposed to projecting. Then you have a chance to be fully present and actually see it and feel it. And then you can interact with it in a way that's actually meaningful. Okay, so that is the problem of desire. So the idea is to do this exercise of feeling it, right? But then allowing, so let's see, you know, thinking of desire is you know, this watch or that piece of chocolate, and then let that desire like pass through it. Let that become the conduit, let it become the catalyst for you to really feel that. The same way that you had that one person, that niece or nephew or pet or something, that allows you to feel that real heart opening, that real love. Let that become the catalyst, the spark for that desire, and then allow that to permeate the entire surroundings, make bigger circles, county, city, state, world, universe. Feel that. Notice how that feels different. Yes? Different? Okay, good. So that is the exercise. So the other aspect of tantric Buddhism is about attention. It's about being fully present in the moment. And he calls these the micro practices, which is very similar to the micro practices we did with love. And the idea is that at any moment of existence that you are here right now, right, you have the entirety of the universe at your fingertips, right? You can feel the whole world. You can. There is ecstasy everywhere. You don't have to be at some special party. You don't have to be with some special person. There's so much joy and energy out there that it's right here. Okay, so you know maybe a party would be nicer. But there is such an excess right here, right now, that if you were to just open the channels of your awareness to that, you would feel it all, and you'd feel pretty great. So what I invite you to do right now is to take that piece of chocolate, okay, and look at it. We're going to start by just looking at it. And focus all of your attention on it. Notice its particular texture. Notice its particular color. Okay? Notice the way it feels in your hands, right? Give it the attention you have not given it ever, right? Because you were too busy gobbling it up as it entered your hand. Okay, so just look at it and really feel that. And as you do that, slowly bring it up to your nose, close your eyes, and take a deep, deep whiff. Okay, and it's really important that you actually pay attention to this and do it to get the full experience, okay? And take a deep whiff and notice what that does to your head. Notice what that does to your taste buds, and maybe you even start to salivate already. And then what I want you to do is to imagine what it would feel like if you were to take that little bit of chocolate, right, and a little bit of it would touch the tip of your tongue, okay? That first molecule of chocolate. Imagine that explosion of flavor that would happen on the tip of your tongue. That little miniature orgasm happening inside on top of your taste bud, just going, okay? And imagine that first. Imagine how that would send a shockwave of feeling and excitement, electricity, down your tongue, up to your head, and down the rest of your body, okay? And only when you've actually felt that already without tasting it, I want you to actually have a taste of it. Take a tiny bite and let it sit on your tongue and let it just melt right there. So it spreads on the taste buds of your tongue, and then allow all of that electrical impulse flow through your tongue, into your brain, down your body, everywhere you want it to go. And notice how that is a different experience from the way you have experienced chocolate up to this point. Okay? And continue the mindfulness. Continue and notice where the sensation goes. Notice where it goes in your mouth, in your body. Notice where you feel heat, tingliness, wherever it is. And make a mental record of that. And follow that feeling. Really feel that. Okay? And only when you've done that and you're ready, take another bite. And if you have some Prosecco you'd like to drink, you can do it with that too. Or even water. Even something as supposedly tasteless as water. If you really attend to the texture, the temperature, the way it feels on your tongue as your body starts to absorb it, even before you swallow it, mm-hmm. The way it nourishes every cell in you, it changes the entire experience of water. And the idea is that ecstasy is present all the time. And it's present right beyond every single cell of your body if you choose to pay attention. Okay? And the idea is that if a guy sees you looking like, freeze, don't move, right there. She has big goofy smile on her face. She's like this and she's like that, okay? Who's going to resist? Nobody, right? I get to see all of you, of course. That's part of a perks of this job, right? Seeing all of you lit up, happy, and really feeling, okay? Because what happens when you do this is you become embodied. You become less of a head and more of a whole person, right? You're all smart women, right? That's because it says smart woman on the cover, right? Obviously. And you're here. That means by definition you're smart. So the idea is that, you know, you spend all this time doing stuff with your head. You manipulate the world around you, you direct things, you create things, and that's fantastic and that's awesome. At the same time, you want to have all of you functioning all the time, all of you present, especially when it comes to interacting in an intimate relationship. Okay? So, how does that feel?
Luscious.
Yes, luscious? Okay. Some. How does that feel?
Great.
And you can also respond in monosyllables or just grunt, groan. That's fine too. Yes.
I had a
drink
with the
chocolate. Oh, okay. There's more where that came from. Okay, good. And you have the chance to do this anytime you want. It's really that simple.
The men like doing this?
Huh? Oh, yeah. Remember, the savoring is a universal thing. Yes.
I don't know. I like the idea of feeling a desire about opening your eyes.
That's fantastic. All right, good. Sure.
I can't eat chocolate, so I was imagining eating.
That's good. Okay. Or you can do it with anything else you like. And are you finding this useful, even though supposedly it's here for women?
Yeah.
You felt it.
My saliva just took on this electric flavor of its own before I even got the chocolate.
There you go. You don't even need the chocolate. You have your own saliva. But the point is, ecstasy is right here, okay? It's always here. And if you are able to access it first, it's contagious. You can give it to other people, right? And then you can also teach other people to feel more of it, too. Just feeling more alive. If you have... Over here, Cher, yes? You already mentioned, yes? Yes?
Satisfied, that's like satisfied. The first word that came to my mind was satisfied.
Nice.
But I love food, and I love to talk about food, and I love to think about food.
Yeah, savoring is a big, big component.
Anticipation.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Savoring is a big component of any kind of mindfulness. And, you know, do this with your next meal. It's just, it's miraculous. The best meal, the most tasty meal I ever had was not an expensive restaurant. It was not some fancy French cuisine. It was at a meditation retreat. It was a 5-day retreat, and it was kind of silent. We weren't allowed to talk to other people, and you know, after like the first 6 hours, I'm like, this is crazy, this is insane. But your intention is just focused to a point, to a sharp point, and everything is much more intense. And the food was this very simple vegetarian cuisine. It was just like this lentils and chopped tomatoes and stuff. I had one spoonful and I almost passed out. I was like, woohoo! Because for the first time, I actually felt the food. And everything was alive. The texture of the lentils, the temperature of the tomatoes was slightly cooler, the saltiness and the sweetness and all that together was just like, holy smokes. So, there you go. I just made all of your meals super duper gourmet. And you don't have to spend nearly as much money on food anymore. All right, good deal. So, so we're getting, so you guys want me to go on or you want Q&A? Go on, a little more,
go
yes?
On.
Okay, we'll give you like, yeah, another 5 minutes of me pontificating. So, Tao of Dating, let's talk about the Tao of Dating. So, all these principles are incorporated in some way in the book, yes? Those of you who read it, I mean, kind of, the flavor is there. But I also want to give you some specifics. So, the title for this talk was How to Be Irresistible. So, I've given you some practices for that. So this is how you become irresistible. You become the light, right? So be the light. People ask me, give me the short version of the book. Oh, it's only 280 pages. No problem. So I give them the three-letter version, which is be the light, right? When you are the light, when you are warming and brightening everything around you, you feel great. Other people feel your light and they want to be around you. The rest is detail. Now, specifically, the practices for being irresistible. Okay, so how do you break this down? There's a lot of ways of doing this. So I like to think of it in terms of the chakras. The chakras in your body, right? So the head chakra, the heart chakra, and the groin chakra. Or mind, body, spirit, however you want to talk about it. Okay, so how do you attract with your mind? How do you become irresistible with your mind? How do you become irresistible with your heart? And how do you become irresistible with your body? So one of the big principles in the Tao of Dating is to be aware of masculine and feminine energy. So, you know, it's a bit of a rough rubric, but approximately, you know, it's not a hard and fast thing. But basically, stuff that goes out, stuff that does is masculine, is yang. Stuff that receives is yin. Simply. Okay? So the ultimate embodiment of feminine energy would be to receive, to surrender and to receive. So how do you exercise that in the context of mind, heart, mind, spirit, and body? So what do you talk about when you go on a date, right? Well, okay, so this makes it really simple. Instead of worrying about what you're going to talk about on a date, the way you make yourself irresistible is by being a very good listener, okay? So you just listen, you take it in, and you absorb. Why? Because everybody in this world has something really cool to chime in with and says, oh, but let me tell you this. They never let you finish your sentence. If you're the one person who lets people finish their sentence, they will love you forever, okay? And it's really hard to do, right? And guys are bad at it, girls are bad at it, but it is really powerful if you do it. So, and then what you want to do is you want to draw the other person out. Guy or girl, doesn't matter. And you do that with this thing I call the magic question. The magic question is, what's important to you about that? Okay? You're not saying why. Why can sound like an interrogation. Why can sound like judgmental. It's like, why'd you do that? That was the dumbest thing I ever heard, right? As opposed to, what was important to you about that? Okay? Or, help me understand that better. Right? That was really interesting. Okay, so that's the magic question. Why? Rephrase as, what's important to you about that? Okay, so listen and ask, what's important to you about that? So that's the mind, right? So you just took care of that whole thing, right? So this is in contradistinction to one-upmanship, proving you're smarter, proving you're as smart, all these things that people with PhDs, JDs, and MDs like to do, right? That'll be you guys, okay? It doesn't matter. The point is to feel good, make the other person feel fully received. That is how you become irresistible, using your head. Heart we kind of talked about already a little bit, right? Then the whole idea is, once again, receptivity, okay? And the idea is that if you give complete devotion to another person, especially a man, right? If you make him feel bigger than he ever thought he could be, right? Then you have a monopoly on men because nobody else is doing that, right? If you say, you know you're doing this, but I think you can do even better, right? Then the guy's like, really? And then you encourage him, and then you give him energy. Now notice, this is not necessarily easy. It is simple, but it's not easy. This is a practice. This is work, right? And again, it involves subsuming your own ego to this bigger cause, which is, how do I make this person feel fantastic? And is this diminishing your power? No, this is your power. You are empowering other people. That means you are powerful. This is something you can do, okay? So devotion. You give devotion, right? That is the irresistible from the heart. And finally, irresistible to the body. Is it about giving him the best sex he's ever had, being amazing in the sack, you know, being the empress of the blowjob? Not necessarily, right? I mean, those are good things. And in the book, I encourage everybody to go and get very good at this. These are simple skills that you can learn in a matter of weeks, right? And since most people spend their entire lives not actually learning or not learning, parents, they still to this day have not spoken to sex about me. Amazing. Parents, what are they for? So you have to learn on your own, but I digress. The way you become irresistible through your body is, again, yin, receiving, okay? So when I say, feel free to express your appreciation through sound, right? Why? Because that just lights guys up, right? Because guys are basically deaf, dumb, and blind versions of women when it comes to sensuality and feeling the world, right? You smell 10 times better, you hear better, you feel a hell of a lot, you feel more, your olfactory sense works better, your tongue works, everything works more. There's a saying in Islam, which is that of pleasure Allah gave made created 10 parts, gave 1 part to man and 9 to woman. We want a piece of that 9, damn it, okay? So you, when you receive the universe, right, when you express your pleasure, when you feel through touch, when you have, like, you know, soft silk or cashmere or something, and you just luxuriate in that, right? When you hear sound, and you hear the music, you're like, oh, that feels so great. When you eat food and you truly savor it, as opposed to, oh, sorry, I'm everything free, I can't eat that. When you really just feel the universe fully, right? And you become a conduit so the guy can feel that too, they will love you, okay? And that's really not that hard. That actually, you're designed to already do this. Yes?
Well,
tell me your name again.
Laura.
Laura, yes, Laura.
And I have 10 11-year-old boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm feeling you because I give this to them.
Mm-hmm.
What you're describing as far as the male-female interchange,
mm-hmm.
and like you are the bomb and you are the this and you are the that and empowering them.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to transfer that into to transfer that into a male-female adult relationship is a different thing,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes.
So it's just interesting because I think about my guys and I'm like, oh, we already do it.
Right?
So obviously I'm 43 years old and I'm not in a committed relationship. So I'm looking at like, how do I do that without doing it too much to where I give up my power?
Mm-hmm. But how would you be giving up your power if you did that? The only way I see you giving up your power is if you do it in a mothering way. Mm-hmm. You don't want to mother the guy. You want to be the catalyst for his growth, right? And you do it because it's fun. Okay, so that's the key thing. You always want to be in touch with you. You're only giving up your power if it's not fun anymore. If you feel you're doing it out of obligation or this doctor guy told me at some seminar. No. You do it because you're like, it feels good to make other people feel good. It's like you're planting a seed in your garden and a flower comes up. I mean, how cool is that? How many people like the garden? Garden? You like flowers? That's like one of the best feelings in the world. Like, that's what you're doing. And that does not involve diminishing of your power in any way. It's only like, I am an awesome gardener.
But there is something about the nurturance of, because I have sons too, or daughters or
mm-hmm.
whatever, but the nurturance and the tapping into, I think, that very devoted feeling
mm-hmm.
that you might have as a parent and how to transform that into an adult sexual relationship. So, but there are some similar kind of, these feelings that it would invoke
mm-hmm.
in terms of love and devotion, I guess.
And nurturing.
Look, I've already declared myself an expert about women. I've never been a woman. Now to say I'm an expert about kids too, that's just way too much. Never been a parent.
There's
another
overlay, but there's an interesting overlay to it.
So what I would encourage you to do is to take that feeling you have for your children, right, which is something you know already, right, and then just use that minus the mothering part for guys because it's super powerful and you're already doing it. Pardon me? You are not making their lunch. You don't have to do that, yes.
I'll go push on that.
Yes.
But I would like to add to that, it's more of an admiration thing. It's like, you are the hero. But not as a hero child, like, oh, you can do it,
right.
You are the hero. But more of a...
Yep. Yeah, I agree. And one of my friends phrased that very effectively. He said, make you be his win. How are you his win? It's like, yes, I got the coolest girl ever, right? Yes.
Okay, so I appreciate your mirroring exercise. I really appreciate your listening exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Great skills of communication.
Mm-hmm.
But being the devotee and the conduit, I feel a little bit like putting myself in a situation where I'm living for someone else and I don't really agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to give up myself to make someone feel like they're really cool and then be like, no, but you're actually cool, but you could be a little better and playing that game.
Mm-hmm.
That's putting myself down, and I'm
mm-hmm.
not willing to do that. What are your...
Mm-hmm. But explain, to help you understand, how are you putting yourself down?
Well, to tell someone, you know, I also didn't eat the chocolate. I felt nothing. But the whole, like, doing the situation where you're like, you're so great.
Mm-hmm.
And but you could be better. It's just this whole, like, it's all like a worship 50s kind of mentality.
Tell me your name again.
Molly.
Molly. Molly.
Yeah.
I want you to think about this. You don't have to answer immediately. Because
okay.
As soon as I say it, I'm going to have my answer.
I'll think.
Do you feel great?
I do.
Okay. Do you feel like you're truly great, that you're truly empowered in your power as a person?
Yeah.
Okay. So I have my answer. You don't really. It is
you
the business. It comes out differently when it's really there, okay? So the point is, you will be able to do that for another person to the extent that you give permission for your own greatness.
I just want to spend my life pursuing, like, my stuff. And
mm-hmm.
I don't feel like in this day and age we shouldn't have to give up our stuff to compliment someone else's.
Right. So the idea is, if it's fun, then you're not giving anything up, right? So right now I'm standing here and I'm having a great time. I'm seeing all of you light up. I'm seeing all of you have a great time. And enjoy yourselves, feel things you haven't felt before. Am I giving something up, do you think?
I think you're doing a great job.
Mm-hmm. No, but do you think I'm diminishing myself in some way? Am I giving something else? Could I be doing something else that's more fun?
I just want to, like, I love the idea of
mm-hmm.
treating people through communication. That's fantastic. That's
mm-hmm.
a great skill to learn.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't. It's hard for me to put yourself in a position where you put someone on a pedestal to make
There's no pedestal. That's the thing. There is no pedestal. So.
So, but you're saying for the devotion,
mm-hmm.
you're telling them you're great, but you could be better, but you're so great.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I just don't want to do that.
You are seeing the greatness in him, in everyone.
Right.
It's not about the guy.
You might not even say it. You have to feel it and then live it.
Yes.
And it's interesting because it hasn't happened.
But that's the power you guys want to give up, right?
No, but you don't.
It's
because
it's
you don't need it. Because you don't need it. You already
and
have
that's why
to, but it's not. Anyway.
You're more.
I've only done that. Listen, it hasn't happened to me that often, but
right.
I know what you're talking about, and it is huge when it happens.
And this is why you do the exercises for yourself first, because then you feel it and you realize. Love is like information, right? You can give it away and you still have it, right? And there is no shortage. There is no shortage. It's not like if I give it to him, then I go down. No. You give it to other people, you keep going up. So there is a shortage. Yes, Anna.
I think the issue is that I think we're trained to be doctors and lawyers and executives and
mm-hmm.
build up companies
mm-hmm.
And so I think that it's kind of related to what Molly said. It's not exactly the same,
mm-hmm.
but it's related. And that, you know, that's kind of how we're socialized. And so I think that we approach it. I mean, I was dating, and now I'm in a committed relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And even being in a committed relationship, I see that, you know, when I come home from work, it's hard to not be the head of the legal department at home.
Yeah.
And I think that's a problem because I think a lot of people, you know, like Molly, see it as giving up your power. And I agree with you that there's a way to do it where it is equally powerful, but I think it would be helpful if you would speak to that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a whole seminar into itself, really, about the whole idea of, you know, where does your power come from and how you relate. And, you know, I talk about dating and relationships. There's other people who are very, very good at that, but that is not necessarily my domain. But that said, the people who say that there's some loss there, it's you're coming from a model of scarcity, of somehow there's this limited pot, right? It's a zero-sum game, and what they take, then I can only take what's left, as opposed to abundance, which is that there is enough love all over the place all the time. That said, I want to give you a practice. By the way, we're going to do one housekeeping detail, and we are firmly into the question-answer part of the evening right now. So everybody stand up, please. Okay, good. And all of you who signed up online, take a seat. Okay, all the rest of you stand up. And the rest of you, see Barry afterwards. Thank you very much. Okay, good. So, because if I say who didn't pay, you're not going to raise your hands. Okay, good. So, yes, question and answer. So, where were we? Scarcity, abundance, right. So, a very simple practice is look. You're marinating in masculine energy all day long if you are doing stuff, because that's what masculine energy is, doing stuff, directing stuff, manipulating things, making stuff happen, okay? So the idea is that if you have that predominantly masculine energy when encountering your partner, who is likely to be a guy with his own masculine energy, right? He is also CEO, right? So you want to be able to make a transition, and the transition is back into receptivity. So what do? Maybe you switch out of your work clothes. Maybe instead of wearing the two-piece, the suit, you put on something a little softer, maybe a dress, maybe you take a bubble bath. You do something deliberate to get back into your feminine energy. And the thing is, your real power is in your feminine energy, okay? You're a tigress who is capable on land. That's your domain, right? If we throw you in water, suddenly you're in trouble, okay? So you want to be in your domain, which is feminine energy, because that's what you're generally speaking designed to be better at. So do the transition thing. Maybe something as simple as just putting on some of your favorite perfume, putting on some lotion, getting back in touch with that sensuality. I cannot overemphasize the power of physical practices, of embodiment, of feeling these heart practices, because that's what actually works. The intellectual stuff, you know, I don't have just one self-help book. I have 900 of them, right? Because you put the intellectual stuff in there, and it feels good for 10 minutes, and then you forget, right? So embodying it, on the other hand, becomes automatic. Yes?
I have a question that's not exactly, not really speaking. I just came up with this question.
Okay.
So after reading the book, and I read the part about, you know, the good guys, and like who's, how you determine who the good guy and I'm curious about some of the bad boys that I've dated.
Bad boys, of
bad
course.
Boys.
Yes.
And what the rush and the adrenaline and the excitement,
yes.
And what from a female, as a woman, can you speak a little bit about that?
Okay, so that's great. I was actually going to bring one of these letters that I got recently, which was exactly about that. And the question was, how can I not be attracted to the bad boys? And the answer is, you can't not be attracted to the bad boys. Okay, it's like saying, excuse me, you know, I took this stuff, you know, it was kind of like, you know, white powder, maybe even cocaine. I snorted and I got high. How do I not get high? You can't. Because
you
this
stay
is
away from them, basically. That's
right. So what you want to do is, you kind of, at a certain point, you decide, right, whether you are a girl or a woman. You decide whether you are a kid or an adult. You decide whether I'm just going to eat this cheesecake for lunch, or I'm going to eat the meal instead, right? So this is about restraint. And sometimes what you want to do is you want to introduce actual physical constraints, as in, I will not go to the place where the bad boys hang out, say the biker bar. I will not go out with this girlfriend of mine who tends to just make a beeline for the bad boys, right? I will not go home with the bad boy after he, you know, he chats me up. Stuff like this. So actually make the physical constraints. So the idea is that, you know, looking at cheesecake from behind the, you know, the glass at the store, pretty harmless, right? But if you put the cheesecake within eating range with the fork, suddenly the danger goes up, okay? So recognize your own limitations, right? Recognize your own willpower. If you think alcohol reduces said willpower, then you may want to not indulge in that in the presence of bad boys, okay? And here's the thing. Let's say the disaster happens. Oh no, you hooked up with them and you had this night of amazing intense sex, right? Not all is lost. It's okay. This is not a bad thing. You had fun. But to compound the error by continuing, that would be bad, okay? So the point is, you're entitled to have fun. But just know what you're getting yourself into. If you are getting together with a bad boy because he's a bad boy, cool. But if you think you're gonna fix him, you think he's, you know, you're gonna make him turn around, oh, I'm gonna be the one. I mean, and the amazing thing is, you know, you are not any better than the 4,000 women who have hooked up with Charlie Sheen, okay? Everything that they have, you have. All that machinery is there, okay? They just, you know, maybe they had a little less in self-control at that moment, or maybe you had the good fortune of not bumping into it. But the point is, that machinery we all share, right? Recognize your common humanity and just know that you have to stay away from it. That's all. I make it sound really easy, but it's not easy.
Well, I can understand that, and I think I'm at a point, like what you said about, I've done it a few times now, and I understand where that the old way was thinking that I would, that they would change, or this was a possible great relationship.
Yeah.
Now I'm more in the place of, I'm really making a choice about this, and what
what is this, what is the, I guess my question is, what is the excitement and the thrill of it? Like,
well,
you know, if you didn't connect, I don't know what that
I will give you a practice, again, from Buddhism, which is the witness consciousness. And the idea is that, okay, here you are, here's this thing you really get turned on by, a piece of chocolate, bad boy, whatever it is, right? And you feel that, and you realize you are not the feeling, right? If you were to look at some clouds passing, that doesn't make you the clouds,
right?
If you look at a frog, and that frog, you know, impresses image upon your head, it doesn't make you a frog, okay? And you are not your thoughts, you are not your feelings, you are the thing that's actually feeling those. You're the mirror that the clouds are passing through, okay? So if you're able to take that one step back and say, oh, this is that bad boy feeling, right? It's not real. He's not good for you. He's not the thing you want. It's just a feeling. So that is the long-term and permanent solution. In the meantime, while you're working towards that with meditation, you know, you run away the other direction. So, yes, was there another question? Yes, over here.
Well, I was going to say, to you, what you're talking about keeping focus, but it's actually in the book that you talk about what are you looking for.
Yeah.
And, you know,
well, that's what
I'm, and that has really helped guide me. I've avoided a lot of disasters, I think, in the last few months since I read your book.
Oh, wow.
To help me focused on, you know, this is not what I'm looking for, it's wrong region, you know, wrong activity.
Mm-hmm. Know what you want, and mostly know what your deal breakers are, and stick with it.
Right, because I was going to say, what if part of it is what you want?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I'm like a good guy with a bad boy edge.
Mm.
And I'm unapologetic about that.
Absolutely.
But unfortunately, lately it seems I get the bad boy with the good boy edge when he wants
right.
to be.
Right. Well, the danger of...
It's really hard.
The danger of bad boys is this, is that they produce such a heady stream of chemicals in your body and your mind, right? That you start making excuses for them.
Yeah.
Anytime you start making excuses for a guy, you're with the wrong guy. Mm-hmm. Okay?
That's
fair.
Say more about that.
God, you know, he doesn't show up on time. You know, he set me up a couple of times. And, you know, he's always getting these texts from these other women. But when he's sweet, he's so sweet. Oh, my God. Okay, so that's kind of like crack. It's like, you know, afterwards I feel kind of shitty and I'm losing my teeth and my hair is falling out, but oh my God, at that moment when I hit it, oh, it's so good. Yes? Okay, so you're saying if you commit to this guy, you're wondering whether you're committing to the right person, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, so the guide for your actions is how you feel, okay? So how does this guy make you feel? Does he make you feel like the queen of the universe, you can do whatever, you know, you're much bigger than you were? Everything that we said about devotion goes both ways, right? So if he's giving you devotion such that you feel amazing, you feel super empowered, and you don't want to be with anybody else, then you're like, this is good. He may not even look like what you thought he should look like. He may not even have the same job you thought he should have had. So all those things from checklist suddenly go away because you have the fulfillment. Fulfillment is not a person. Fulfillment is a feeling. So that's one of the big principles from the book, right? And so many of us, myself included, we're like, I want this, 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 and this, this look, this education, this income. And you get it, and you're like, oh, shit, but I feel like crap. What's going on here, right? And so many people marry that person, and then again, 50% divorce rate. So, so the idea is, how do you feel, right? And if you're thinking, well, I could do better elsewhere, right? And you really could, that's something to consider. That said, the thing that makes you happy in life is commitment, okay? There's this book, which is great. All of you should read it, but I'm going to give you the 30-second version. It's called The Paradox of Choice. And the idea that more choice does not make you happier, more choice makes you miserable. Why? Because A, you have a more difficult time choosing out of, you know, one jam out of 30. That's the classic experiment. Like, as opposed to one jam out of 3 or just one jam. You're like, this is good. And you eat the jam and you're happy, right? And the second part is, once you decide out of the panoply of choices that you have, right, you're going to second guess yourself because you're like, but maybe the red Prius was better than the blue one. I got the blue one. So the idea is the more you limit your choice and commit, the happier you're going to be. So I'm a big fan of going for the best possible, right? But there is something you said about satisficing, which is when you have good enough, you stop. You stop the search and you're like, cool. So it all depends on where you are. Hmm? Yeah. Oh, you read the okay.
Yeah.
Paradox of Choice. I love this town. People read books. Yeah. So satisficing means that you search until you get the thing that satisfies you. So it's like suffice and satisfies, right? And then you stop searching because you can never optimize. Optimizing is the opposite, which is you search the entire space of existence, which never happens, right? So you're like, oh, but I could have gone to Bali and met some yoga dude over there. Who knows, right? You never know. So satisficing actually works better. Now, I don't know what the case is in your particular situation. There's probably more to it. But, you know, you talk to your friends. Your friends are really good at this. Your friends generally have your best interests in mind, right? And they will tell you whether this guy is good for you or whether you need to, you know, go for a little improvement. Yes.
Well,
Laura.
I want to talk a little bit about prioritizing because I wasn't very good at it in my 20s and or early 30s, maybe mid 30s. So let's not elaborate on that anymore. But basically, you know, it was interesting because basically what happened was, is that as I traversed through these relationships, there were people in my life that could have given me this, and this. And it seemed like a great idea, and it all seemed perfect, and it all seemed wonderful, and it seemed like everything everyone would want. But then there was something missing, right? So back to what you were saying with your questions, it was like, you know, in that environment, you have to pick that thing that really makes you tick. At the time, with my ex-boyfriend Peter, he was a provider, he was a giver, he was wonderful in every way. Other than the fact that he bored me to tears, and I couldn't like have fun with him, and he just like there were certain little things throughout the relationship that really killed me, and it was so difficult, and it was like the guy could have been the perfect guy for me, but I frankly think it would have been the same today. It really would have been, and you sort of have to like do your best today and where you are in your body and mind. To go, what really is the most important, what are the most important factors? What's going to make you feel the best? And what's going to make you be, you know, your best person and fulfill you the most in a relationship? Is it sex? Is it all, whatever it is? I mean, that's a piece of it, obviously. But, I mean, what is it that really makes you, like, internally gratified?
Mm-hmm. That's thank you for sharing. That's good. And you also realize that in this room there's a lot of wisdom from actual women, you know, as opposed to, say, me, who had a relationship with actual men. Which I also
actual.
Had. Actual men, yes. And I like to simplify things because that's just easier that way. And so my super simplified version is that know what your deal breakers are, then go with the feeling. Okay, so not a druggie, gainfully employed. Doesn't have kids, isn't in the middle of a divorce, single's a big one. You'd be shocked and amazed how many people ignore that one. It's like, oh.
It's going to be a single.
Yeah. Yeah. Separating is not single. Living with his wife still is not single. So anyway, know what your deal breakers are, then go with the feeling, because that expands the pool of possibility. You never know who's the guy who's going to be the one who's the real catalyst for your flourishing and growth. So, do we have any burning questions? Because we don't. It's already 9:08. So one last question. Yes.
Okay. So I haven't read the book. Mm-hmm. Maybe you address this, but I'm wondering: are committed relationships really desirable in our culture, in our situation? And I keep thinking I'm not in one, but then I'm wondering maybe this is the best possible.
You mean committed or monogamous?
Well, it depends on what you mean by committed, right? So I'll address that. Because I've written about that a lot. I think about that. And the way I think about it is this. So with this definition of love that I just gave you, right, with all this research, right, love is this moment-to-moment thing that happens. It happens in the very short term, right, and it happens with a lot of different people. It does not happen exclusively, and also it doesn't last forever. Okay, so that's what the feeling of love, the thing that your body and mind perceive as love really is. Okay, so this opens the possibilities significantly, right, for experiencing love, and that's good. And you can date multiple people if you want. However, there's such a thing as what I call natural monogamy, which is that there's one person, you really dig this person, you spend all this time together, and researchers have shown that you can only have 10 to 12 real friends in life, because that's just the number of hours you have in the day. It takes a certain amount of time and energy investment to have a real friend, right? And so if you really have a good relationship with someone, then the other ones will just fall off because there's just not enough time in the day. So that's what happens. So in the meantime, I would say maintain your choices, have fun, but you may find yourself craving that depth, which you can't get when you have a lot of bread, because 24 hours can only slice so much. Is that a useful rubric? Yes, you like? Okay, good. Well, first of all, I want to thank all of you for coming here. This is my first talk in San Francisco, and it's much bigger than the other one. So question for you is, did you find this useful?
Yes.
Okay, and should I do it again?
Yes.
Yes, sure? Okay, good. Because the idea is to do this on a regular basis, either weekly or bi-weekly. There's like Pat Allen who does something like this in L.A. every week. And the idea is to, you bring your questions. I do a little spiel like this, very similar. New meditation practice, new game, new something, right? So there's something new each time, but also repetition, because you learn this stuff by doing it, practicing it longitudinally. So even if you don't have time to do it on your own, then this once a week or once every 2 weeks practice will become something that perhaps cements that in your mind. And so what I ask from you is, if you found this useful and you signed up through Eventbrite, which most of you did, just put up comments. I think there's a rating system there. Put a comment so people see it for next time, because this is how people find out about it. Tweet out on Facebook, hashtag Tao of Dating, because this is how we spread the word, and this is how we get a whole bunch of lit up, awesome, empowered women in this world, which is what the Dalai Lama said is going to save the planet. So don't do it for me. Do it to save the planet. So thank you so much. We still have booze. We have chocolate. And those of you who have not yet purchased your ticket, Barry can help you with that, $10. And that is all. We probably need to clear out of here in 15 or 20 minutes, so be mindful of that. Enjoy each other's company. If you want me to sign your books, I'm here for you. Also, questions in private, here at. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
I love Facebook.
All right. Come here.
Marianne.
How do you spell? One word?
One word.
Perfect.
I have an
object of affection.
Yeah.
It's brand new.